You look lovely, Alicia. It was a great day.
A flicker of surprise passed across her face, and then a faint wistfulness. Really? You really think so? I do think. I mean, there's so much I want to say.
Really, Will said. There's no need. You remember Louisa?
I do. There was a brief silence. I could see Rupert hovering in the background, eyeing us all warily. She glanced back at him, and then held out a hand in a half wave. Well, thank you anyway, Will. You are a superstar for coming. And thank you for the...
Mirror.
Of course, I absolutely loved the mirror. She stood up and walked back to her husband, who turned away, already clasping her arm. We watched them cross the dance floor. You didn't buy her a mirror.
I know.
They were still talking, Rupert's gaze flickering back to us. It was as if he couldn't believe Will had simply been nice. Mind you, neither could I. Did it bother you? I said to him. He looked away from them.
No, he said, and he smiled at me. His smile had gone a bit lopsided with drink, and his eyes were sad and contemplative at the same time. And then, as the dance floor briefly emptied for the next dance, I found myself saying,
What do you say, Will? Going to give me a whirl?
What?
Come on, let's give these fuckers something to talk about.
Oh, good, Mary said, raising a glass. Fucking marvellous.
Come on, while the music is slow, because I don't think you can pogo in that thing. I didn't give him any choice. I sat down carefully on Will's lap, draped my arms around his neck to hold myself in place. He looked into my eyes for a minute, as if working out whether he could refuse me. Then, astonishingly, Will wheeled us out onto the dance floor and began moving in small circles under the sparkling lights of the mirror balls. I felt simultaneously acutely self-conscious and mildly hysterical. I was sitting at an angle that meant my dress had risen halfway up my thighs.
Leave it, Will murmured into my ear.
This is...
Come on, Clark. Don't let me down now.
I closed my eyes and wrapped my arms around his neck, letting my cheek rest against his, breathing in the citrus smell of his aftershave. I could feel him humming along with the music.
Are they all appalled yet? He said.
I opened one eye and glanced out into the dim light. A couple of people were smiling encouragingly, but most seemed not to know what to make of it. Mary saluted me with her drink, and then I saw Alicia staring at us, her face briefly falling. When she saw me looking, she turned away and muttered something to Rupert. He shook his head as if we were doing something disgraceful. I felt a mischievous smile creeping across my face.
Oh, yes, I said.
Ha! Move in closer. You smell fantastic.
So do you. Although, if you keep turning in left-hand circles, I may throw up. Will changed direction.
My arms looped around his neck. I pulled back a little to look at him, no longer self-conscious. He glanced down at my chest. To be fair, with me positioned where I was, there wasn't anywhere else he could really look. He lifted his gaze from my cleavage and raised an eyebrow.
You know, you would never have let those breasts so close to me if I weren't in a wheelchair,
he murmured. I looked back at him steadily. You would never have looked at my breasts if you hadn't been in a wheelchair.
What? Of course I would.
Nope. You would have been far too busy looking at the tall blonde girls with the endless legs and the big hair, the ones who can smell an expense account at 40 paces. And anyway, I wouldn't have been here. I would have been serving the drinks over there, one of the invisibles. He blinked. Well, I'm right, aren't I? Will glanced over at the bar, then back at me.
Yes, but in my defence, Clark, I was an arse.
I burst out laughing so hard that even more people looked over in our direction. I tried to straighten my face. Sorry, I mumbled. I think I'm getting hysterical.
Do you know something?
I could have looked at his face all night. The way his eyes wrinkled at the corners. That place where his neck met his shoulder.
What? Sometimes, Clark, you are pretty much the only thing that makes me want to get up in the morning.
Then let's go somewhere. The words were out almost before I knew what I wanted to say.
What?
Let's go somewhere. Let's have a week where we just have fun. You and me. None of these... He waited.
Arses?
Arses! Say yes, Will. Go on. His eyes didn't leave mine. I don't know what I was telling him. I don't know where it all came from. I just knew if I didn't get him to say yes tonight, with the stars and the freesias and the laughter and Mary, then I had no chance at all. Please. The seconds before he answered me seemed to take forever.
Okay, he said.
Chapter 19.
Nathan. They thought we couldn't tell. They finally got back from the wedding around lunchtime the following day, and Mrs. Traynor was so mad she could barely even speak. You could have rung, she said. She had stayed in just to make sure they arrived back okay. I had listened to her pacing up and down the tiled corridor next door since I got there at 8 a.m. I must have called or texted you both 18 times. It was only when I managed to call the DeWars house and somebody told me the man in the wheelchair had gone to a hotel that I could be sure you both hadn't had some terrible accident on the motorway. The man in the wheelchair. Nice, Will observed. But you could see he wasn't bothered. He was all loose and relaxed, carried his hangover with humour, even though I had the feeling he was in some pain. It was only when his mum started to have a go at Louisa that he stopped smiling. He jumped in and just said that if she had anything to say, she should say it to him, as it had been his decision to stay overnight, and Louisa had simply gone along with it. And as far as I can see, Mother, as a 35-year-old man, I'm not strictly answerable to anybody when it comes to choosing to spend a night at a hotel, even to my parents. She had stared at them both, muttered something about common courtesy, and then left the room. Louisa looked a bit shaken, but he had gone over and murmured something to her, and that was the point at which I saw it. She went kind of pink and laughed. The kind of laugh you do when you know you shouldn't be laughing. A kind of laugh that spoke of a conspiracy. And then Will turned to her and told her to take it easy for the rest of the day. Go home, get changed, maybe catch 40 winks. I can't be walking around the castle with someone who has so clearly just done the walk of shame, he said. Walk of shame? I couldn't keep the surprise from my voice. Not that walk of shame, Louisa said, flicking me with her scarf, and grabbed her coat to leave. Take the car, he called out. It'll be easier for you to get back. I watched Will's eyes follow her all the way to the back door. I would have offered you 7-4 just on the basis of that look alone. He deflated a little after she left. It was as if he'd been holding on until both his mum and Louisa had left the annex. I'd been watching him carefully now, and once his smile left his face, I realized I didn't like the look of him. His skin held a faint blotchiness. He had winced twice when he thought no one was looking, and I could see even from here that he had goosebumps. A little alarm bell had started to sound, distant but shrill, inside my head. You feeling okay, Will? I'm fine. Don't fuss. You want to tell me where it hurts? He looked a bit resigned then, as if he knew I saw straight through him. We had worked together a long time. Okay. Bit of a headache, and... I need my tubes changed. Probably quite sharpish. I had transferred him from his chair onto his bed, and now I began getting the equipment together. What time did Lou do them this morning? She didn't, he winced, and he looked a little guilty. Or last night.
What?
I took his pulse and grabbed the blood pressure equipment. Sure enough, it was sky high. When I put my hand on his forehead, it came away with a faint sheen of sweat. I went for the medicine cabinet and crushed some vasodilator drugs. I gave them to him in water, making sure he drank every last bit. Then I propped him up, placing his legs over the side of the bed, and I changed his tube swiftly, watching him all the while. AD? Yeah. Not your most sensible move, Will. Autonomic dysreflexia was pretty much our worst nightmare. It was Will's body's massive overreaction against pain, discomfort, or, say, an unemptied catheter. His damaged nervous system's vain and misguided attempt to stay in control. It could come out of nowhere and send his body into meltdown. He looked pale, his breathing labored. How's your skin? Bit prickly. Sight? Fine. Ah, man, do you think we need help? Give me 10 minutes, Nathan. I'm sure you've done everything we need. Give me 10 minutes. He closed his eyes. I checked his blood pressure again, wondering how long I should leave it before calling an ambulance. AD scared the hell out of me because you never knew which way it was going to go. He had had it once before, and when I had first started working with him, and he had ended up in hospital for 2 days. Really, Nathan, I'll tell you if I think we're in trouble. He sighed, and I helped him backwards so that he was leaning against his bedhead. He told me Louisa had been so drunk he hadn't wanted to risk letting her loose on his equipment. God knows where she might have stuck the ruddy tubes. He half laughed as he said it. It had taken Louisa almost half an hour to get him out of his chair and into bed, he said. They had both ended up on the floor twice. Luckily, we were both so drunk by then, I don't think either of us felt a thing. She had had the presence of mind to call down to reception, and they had asked a porter to help lift him. Nice chap. I have a vague memory of insisting Louisa give him a £50 tip. I knew she was properly drunk because she agreed to it. Will had been afraid, when she finally left his room, that she wouldn't actually make it to hers. He'd had visions of her curled up in a little red ball on the stairs. My own view of Louisa Clark was a little less generous just at that moment. Well, mate, I think maybe next time you should worry a little bit more about yourself, yeah? I'm all right, Nathan. I'm fine. Feeling better already. I felt his eyes on me as I checked his pulse. Really, it wasn't her fault. His blood pressure was down. His color was returning to normal in front of me. I let out a breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding. We chatted a bit, passing the time while everything settled down, discussing the previous day's events. He didn't seem a bit bothered about his ex. He didn't say much, but for all he was obviously exhausted, he looked okay. I let go of his wrist. Nice tattoo, by the way. He gave me a wry look. Make sure you don't graduate to an in-by, yeah? Despite the sweats and the pain and the infection, he looked for once like there was something else on his mind other than the thing that consumed him. I couldn't help thinking that if Mrs. Traynor had known this, she might not have kicked off as hard as she did. We didn't tell her anything of the lunchtime events. Will made me promise not to. But when Lou came back later that afternoon, she was pretty quiet. She looked pale, with her hair washed and pulled back like she was trying to look sensible. I kind of guessed how she felt. Sometimes when you get hammered to the small hours, you feel pretty good in the morning, but really it's just because you're still a bit drunk. That old hangover is just toying with you, working out when to bite. I figured it must have bitten her around lunchtime. But it became clear after a while that it wasn't just the hangover troubling her. Will kept on and on at her about why she was being so quiet, and then she said, "Yes, well, I've discovered it's not the most sensible thing to stay out all night when you've just moved in with your boyfriend." She was smiling as she said it, but it was a forced smile, and Will and I both knew that there must have been some serious words. I couldn't really blame the guy. I wouldn't have wanted my missus staying out all night with some bloke, even if he was a quad. And he hadn't seen the way Will looked at her. We didn't do much that afternoon. Louisa emptied Will's backpack, revealing every free hotel shampoo, conditioner, miniature sewing kit and shower cap she could lay her hands on. "Don't laugh," she said. "At those prices, Will paid for a bloody shampoo factory." We watched some Japanese animated film, which Will said was perfect hangover viewing. And I stuck around, partly because I wanted to keep an eye on his blood pressure, and partly, to be honest, because I was being a bit mischievous. I wanted to see his reaction when I announced I was going to keep them both company. "Really?" he said. "You like Miyazaki?" He caught himself immediately, saying that of course I would love it, it was a great film, blah, blah, blah. But there it was. I was glad for him on one level. He had thought about one thing for too long, that man. So we watched the film, pulled down the blinds, took the phone off the hook, and watched this weird cartoon about a girl who ends up in a parallel universe with all these weird creatures, half of whom you couldn't tell if they were good or bad. Lou sat right up close to Will, handing him his drink, or, at one point, wiping his eye when he got something in it. It was quite sweet, really, although a little bit of me wondered what on earth this was going to lead to. And then, as Louisa pulled up the blinds and made us all some tea, they looked at each other like two people wondering whether to let you in on a secret. And they told me about going away. 10 days. Not sure where yet, but it would probably be long haul, and it would be good. Would I come and help? Does a bear shit in the woods? I had to take my hat off to the girl. If you had told me 4 months ago that we'd get Will off on a long-haul holiday, hell, that we would get him out of this house, I would have told you you were a few sandwiches short of a picnic. Mind you, I'd have a quiet word with her about Will's medical care before we went. We couldn't afford a near miss like that again if we were stuck in the middle of nowhere. They even told Mrs. T as she popped by, just as Louisa was leaving. Will said it like it was no more remarkable than him going for a walk around the castle. I have to tell you, I was really pleased. That ruddy online poker site had eaten all my money, and I wasn't even planning on a holiday this year. I even forgave Louisa for being stupid enough to listen to Will when he said he hadn't wanted her to do his tubes. And believe me, I had been pretty pissed about that. So it was all looking great, and I was whistling when I shouldered my way into my coat, already looking forward to white sands and blue seas. I was even trying to work out if I could tie in a short visit home to Auckland. And then I saw them. Mrs. Traynor standing outside the back door as Lou waited to set off down the road. I don't know what sort of a chat they'd had already, but they both looked grim. I only caught the last line, but, to be honest, that was enough for me. "I hope you know what you're doing, Louisa."
Chapter 20.
"You what?" We were on the hills just outside town when I told him. Patrick was halfway through a 16-mile run and wanted me to time him while following behind on the bicycle. As I was marginally less proficient on a bicycle than I was at particle physics, this involved a lot of swearing and swerving on my part, and a lot of exasperated shouting on his. He had actually wanted to do 24 miles, but I had told him I didn't think my seat could take it. And besides, one of us needed to do the weekly shop after we got home. We were out of toothpaste and instant coffee. Mind you, it was only me who wanted the coffee. Patrick was on herbal tea. As we reached the top of Sheepcote Hill, me puffing, my legs like lead, I decided to just throw it out there. I figured we still had 10 miles home for him to recover his good mood. "I'm not coming to the Extreme Viking." He didn't stop, but he came close. He turned to face me, his legs still moving under him, and he looked so shocked that I nearly swerved into a tree.
"What? Why?"
"I'm working." He turned back to the road and picked up speed. We had reached the brow of the hill, and I had to close my fingers around the brakes a little to stop myself overtaking him.
"So when did you work this out?"
Fine beads of sweat had broken out on his forehead, and tendons stood out on his calves. I couldn't look at them too long or I started wobbling.
"At the weekend. I just wanted to be sure." "But we've booked your flights and everything."
"It's only EasyJet. I'll reimburse you the £39 if you're that bothered."
"It's not the cost. I thought you were going to support me. You said you were coming to support me."
He could look quite sulky, Patrick. When we were first together, I used to tease him about it. I called him Mr. Grumpy Trousers. It made me laugh, and him so cross that he usually stopped sulking just to shut me up.
"Oh, come on. I'm hardly not supporting you now, am I? I hate cycling, Patrick. You know I do. But I'm supporting you."
We went on another mile before he spoke again. It might have been me, but the pounding of Patrick's feet on the road seemed to have taken on a grim, resolute tone. We were high above the little town now. Me puffing on the uphill stretches, trying and failing to stop my heart racing every time a car came past. I was on Mum's old bike. Patrick wouldn't let me anywhere near his racing demon, and it had no gears, so I was frequently left tailing him. He glanced behind and slowed his pace a fraction so that I could draw level.
"So why can't they get an agency person in?" he said.
"An agency person?"
"To come to the trainer's house. I mean, if you're there for 6 months, you must be entitled to a holiday."
"It's not that simple."
"I don't see why not. You started work there knowing nothing, after all."
I held my breath. This was quite hard, given that I was completely breathless from cycling.
"Because he needs to go on a trip."
"What?"
"He needs to go on a trip. So they need me and Nathan there to help him."
"Nathan?
Who's Nathan?"
"His medical carer. The guy you met when Will came to Mum's." I could see Patrick thinking about this. He wiped sweat from his eyes.
"And before you ask," I added, "no, I am not having an affair with Nathan."
He slowed and glanced down at the tarmac until he was practically jogging on the spot.
"What is this, Lou?
Because Because it seems to me that there is a line being blurred here between what is work and what is, he shrugged, normal. It's not a normal job. You know that. But Will Traynor seems to take priority over everything these days. Oh, and this doesn't. I took my hand off the handlebars and gestured towards his shifting feet. That's different. He calls, you come running. And you go running, I come running. I tried to smile. Very funny. He turned away. It's 6 months, Pat. 6 months. You were the one who thought I should take this job after all. You can't have a go at me for taking it seriously. I don't think it's about the job. I think there's something you're not telling me. I hesitated. Just a moment too long. That's not true. But you won't come to the Viking. I've told you, He shook his head slightly, as if he couldn't hear me properly. Then he began to run down the road, away from me. I could see from the set of his back how angry he was. Oh, come on, Patrick. Can't we just stop for a minute and discuss this? His tone was mulish. No, it will throw out my time. Then let's stop the clock, just for 5 minutes. No, I have to do it in real conditions. He began to run faster, as if he had gained a new momentum. Patrick, I said, struggling suddenly to keep up with him. My feet slipped on the pedals, and I cursed, kicking a pedal back to try and set off again. Patrick! Patrick! I stared at the back of his head, and the words were out of my mouth almost before I knew what I was saying. Okay. Will wants to die. He wants to commit suicide. And this trip is my last attempt to change his mind. Patrick's stride shortened and then slowed. He stopped on the road ahead, his back straight, still facing away from me. He turned slowly. He had finally stopped jogging. Say that again. He wants to go to Dignitas in August. I'm trying to change his mind. This is the last chance I have. He was staring at me like he didn't know quite whether to believe me. I know it sounds mad, but I have to change his mind. So I can't come to the Viking. Why didn't you tell me this before? I had to promise his family I wouldn't tell anyone. It would be awful for them if it got out. Awful. Look, even he doesn't know I know. It's all been tricky. I'm sorry. I reached out a hand to him. I would have told you if I could. He didn't answer. He looked crushed, as if I had done something terrible. There was a faint frown on his face, and he swallowed twice, hard. Pat.
No. I just need to run now, Lou. By myself.
He ran a hand across his hair.
Okay.
I swallowed. Okay. He looked for a moment as if he had forgotten why we were even out there. Then he struck off again, and I watched him disappear on the road ahead of me, his head facing resolutely ahead,
his legs eating up the road beneath him. I had put the request out on the day after we returned from the wedding. Can anyone tell me a good place to go where quadriplegics can have adventures? I am looking for things that an able-bodied person might be able to do. Things that might make my depressed friend forget for a while that his life is a bit limited. I don't really know what I'm hoping for, but all suggestions gratefully received. This is quite urgent. Busy bee. As I logged on, I found myself staring at the screen in disbelief. There were 89 responses. I scrolled up and down the screen, unsure at first whether they could all possibly be in response to my request. Then I glanced around me at the other computer users in the library, desperate for one of them to look at me so that I could tell them. 89 responses to a single question. There were tales of bungee jumping for quadriplegics, of swimming, canoeing, even horse riding with the aid of a special frame. When I watched the online video this linked to, I was a little disappointed that Will had said he really couldn't stand horses. It looked ace. There was swimming with dolphins and scuba diving with supporters. There were floating chairs that would enable him to go fishing and adapted quad bikes that would allow him to go off-road. Some of them had posted photographs or videos of themselves taking part in these activities. A few of them, including Richie, had remembered my previous posts and wanted to know how he was doing. This all sounds like good news. Is he feeling better? I typed a quick response. Maybe, but I'm hoping this trip will really make a difference. Richie responded. Atta girl, if you've got the funds to sort it all out, the sky's the limit. Scooter Girl wrote, make sure you post up some pics of him in the bungee harness. Love the look on guys' faces when they're upside down. I loved them, these quads and their carers, for their courage and their generosity and their imaginations. I spent 2 hours that evening writing down their suggestions, following their links to related websites they had tried and tested, even talking to a few in the chat rooms. By the time I left, I had a destination. We would head to California, to the Four Winds Ranch, a specialist centre which offered experienced help in a way that will make you forget you ever needed help, according to its website. The ranch itself, a low-slung timber building set into a forest clearing near Yosemite, had been set up by a former stuntman who refused to let his spinal injury limit the things he could do. And the online visitors book was full of happy and grateful holiday makers who swore that he had changed the way they felt about their disability and themselves. At least 6 of the chat room users had been there and all said it had turned their lives around. It was wheelchair friendly, but with all the facilities you would expect from a luxury hotel. There were outside sunken baths with discreet hoists and specialist masseurs. There was trained medical help on site and a cinema with spaces for wheelchairs beside the normal seats. There was an accessible outdoor hot tub where you could sit and stare up at the stars. We would spend a week there and then a few days on the coast at a hotel complex where Will could swim and get a good look at the rugged coastline. Best of all, I had found a climax to the holiday that Will would never forget. A skydive, with the help of parachute instructors who were trained in helping quads jump.
They had special equipment that would strap Will to them. Apparently, the most important thing was securing their legs so that their knees didn't fly up and bash them in the face. I would show him the hotel brochure, but I wasn't going to tell him about this. I was just going to turn up there with him and then watch him do it. For those few precious minutes, Will would be weightless and free. He would escape the dreaded chair. He would escape gravity. I printed out all the information and kept that one sheet at the top. Whenever I looked at it, I felt a germ of excitement building, both at the thought of my first ever long-haul trip, but also at the thought that this might just be it. This might be the thing that would change Will's mind. I showed Nathan the next morning, the two of us stooping furtively over our coffees in the kitchen as if we were doing something properly clandestine. He flicked through the papers that I had printed off. I have spoken to other quads about the skydiving thing. There's no medical reason he can't do it. And the bungee jumping. They have special harnesses to relieve any potential pressure points on his spine. I studied his face anxiously. I knew Nathan didn't rate my capabilities when it came to Will's medical well-being. It was important to me that he was happy with what I'd planned. The place here has everything we might need. They say if we call ahead and bring a doctor's prescription, they can even get any generic drugs that we might need, so that there is no chance of us running out. He frowned.
"Looks good," he said finally. "You did a great job."
"You think he'll like it?" He shrugged.
"I haven't got a clue, but..."
He handed me the papers.
"You've surprised us so far, Lou."
His smile was a sly thing, breaking in from the side of his face.
"No reason you couldn't do it again."
I showed Mrs. Traynor before I left for the evening. She had just pulled into the drive in her car, and I hesitated, out of sight of Will's window, before I approached her. "I know this is expensive," I said, "but I think it looks amazing. I really think Will could have the time of his life, if you know what I mean." She glanced through it all in silence, and then studied the figures that I had compiled. "I'll pay for myself if you like, for my board and lodgings. I don't want anyone thinking..."
"It's fine," she said, cutting me off. "Do what you have to do. If you think you can get him to go, then just book it."
I understood what she was saying. There was no time for anything else. "Do you think you can persuade him?" she said. "Well, if I make out that it's..." I swallowed. "Partly for my benefit. He thinks I've never done enough with my life. He keeps telling me I should travel, that I should do things." She looked at me very carefully. She nodded.
"Yes, that sounds like Will."
She handed back the paperwork. "I am..." I took a breath, and then to my surprise I found that I couldn't speak. I swallowed hard, twice. "What you said before, I..." She didn't seem to want to wait for me to speak. She ducked her head, her slim fingers reaching for the chain around her neck. "Yes,
Well, I'd better go in. I'll see you tomorrow. Let me know what he says. I didn't go back to Patrick's that evening. I had meant to, but something led me away from the industrial park, and instead I crossed the road and boarded the bus that led towards home. I walked the 180 steps to our house and let myself in. It was a warm evening, and all the windows were open in an attempt to catch the breeze. Mum was cooking, singing away in the kitchen. Dad was on the sofa with a mug of tea, Granddad napping in his chair, his head lolling to one side. Thomas was carefully drawing in black felt tip on his shoes. I said hello and walked past them, wondering how it could feel so swiftly as if I didn't quite belong here anymore. Trina was working in my room. I knocked on the door and walked in to find her at the desk, hunched over a pile of textbooks, glasses that I didn't recognise perched on her nose. It was strange to see her surrounded by the things I had chosen for myself, with Thomas's pictures already obscuring the walls I had painted so carefully, his pen drawing still scrawled over the corner of my blind. I had to gather my thoughts so that I didn't feel instinctively resentful. She glanced over her shoulder at me.
"Does Mum want me?" she said.
She glanced up at the clock.
"I thought she was going to do Thomas's tea."
"She is. He's having fish fingers." She looked at me, then removed the glasses.
"You okay? You look like shit."
"So do you." "I know. I went on this stupid detox diet. It's given me hives." She reached a hand up to her chin.
"You don't need to diet." "Yeah, well, there's this bloke I like in accountancy too. I thought I might start making the effort. Huge hives all over your face is always a good look, right?"
I sat down on the bed. It was my duvet cover. I had known Patrick would hate it, with its crazy geometric pattern. I was surprised Katrina didn't. She closed her book and leant back in her chair.
"So what's going on?"
I bit my lip until she asked me again.
"Treen, do you think I could retrain?" "Retrain? As what?"
"I don't know. Something to do with fashion, design, or maybe just tailoring."
"Well, there are definitely courses. I'm pretty sure my uni has one. I can look it up if you want."
"But would they take people like me? People who don't have qualifications?" She threw her pen up in the air and caught it.
"Oh, they love mature students, especially mature students with a proven work ethic. You might have to do a conversion course, but I don't see why not."
"Why? What's going on?"
"I don't know. It's just something Will said a while back about what I should do with my life."
"And?"
"And I keep thinking, maybe it's time I did what you're doing. Now that Dad can support himself again, maybe you're not the only one capable of making something of herself."
"You'd have to pay."
"I know. I've been saving."
"I think it's probably a bit more than you've managed to save."
"I could apply for a grant. Or maybe a loan. And I've got enough to see me through for a bit. I met this MP woman who says she has links to some agency that could help me. She gave me her card." Hang on, Katrina said, swivelling on her chair. I don't really get this. I thought you wanted to stay with Will. I thought the whole point of this was that you wanted to keep him alive and keep working with him. I do, but... I stared up at the ceiling. But what? It's complicated. So's quantitative easing, but I still get that it means printing money. She rose from her chair and walked over to shut the bedroom door. She lowered her voice so that nobody outside could possibly hear. You think you're going to lose? You think he's going to... No, I said hurriedly. Well, I hope not. I've got plans, big plans. I'll show you in a bit. But... I stretched my arms above me, twisting my fingers together. But I like Will. A lot. She studied me. She was wearing her thinking face. There is nothing more terrifying than my sister's thinking face when it is trained directly on you. Oh, shit. Don't. So, this is interesting, she said. I know. I dropped my arms. You want a job so that... It's what the other quads tell me. The ones who I talk to on the message boards. You can't be both. You can't be carer and... I lifted my hands to cover my face. I could feel her eyes on me. Does he know? No. I'm not sure I know. I just... I threw myself down on her bed, face first. It smelt of Thomas, underlaid with a faint hint of Marmite. I don't know what I think. All I know is that most of the time I would rather be with him than anyone else I know. Including Patrick. And there it was, out there. The truth that I could barely admit to myself. I felt my cheeks flood with colour. Yes, I said into the duvet. Sometimes, yes. Fuck, she said after a minute. And I thought I liked to make my life complicated. She lay down beside me on the bed, and we stared up at the ceiling. Downstairs we could hear Grandad whistling tunelessly, accompanied by the whine and clunk of Thomas driving some remote-controlled vehicle backwards and forwards into a piece of skirting. For some unexplained reason, my eyes filled with tears. After a minute, I felt my sister's arm snake around me. You fucking mad woman, she said, and we both began to laugh. Don't worry, I said, wiping up my face. I'm not going to do anything stupid. Good, because the more I think about this, the more I think it's about the intensity of the situation. It's not real. It's about the drama. What? Well, this is actual life or death after all. And you're locked into this man's life every day. Locked into his weird secret. That's got to create a kind of false intimacy. Either that or you're getting some weird Florence Nightingale complex. Believe me, that is definitely not it. We lay there, staring at the ceiling. But it is a bit mad, thinking about loving someone who can't, you know, love you back. Maybe this is just a panic reaction to the fact that you and Patrick have finally moved in together. I know. You're right. And you two have been together a long time. You're bound to get crushes on other people. Especially when Patrick is obsessed with being Marathon Man. And you might go off Will again. I mean, I remember when you thought he was an arse. I still do sometimes. My sister reached for a tissue and dabbed at my eyes. Then she thumbed at something on my cheek. All that said, the college idea is good, because, let's be blunt, whether it all goes tits up with Will or whether it doesn't, you're still going to need a proper job. You're not going to want to be a carer forever. It's not going to go tits up, as you call it, with Will. He's going to be okay. Sure he is. Mum was calling Thomas. We could hear her singing it beneath us in the kitchen. Thomas! Tom, 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 Thomas! Trina sighed and rubbed at her eyes. You going back to Patrick's tonight? Yes. You want to grab a quick drink at the Spotted Dog and show me these plans then? I'll see if Mum will put Thomas to bed for me. Come on, you can treat me, seeing as you're now loaded enough to go to college. It was 9:45 by the time I got back to Patrick's. My holiday plans, astonishingly, had met with Katrina's complete approval. She hadn't even done her usual thing of adding, "Yes, but it would be even better if you..." There had been a point where I wondered if she was doing it just to be nice, because I was obviously going a bit nuts. But she kept saying things like, "Wow, I can't believe you found this. You've got to take lots of pictures of him bungee jumping." And, "Imagine his face when you tell him about the skydiving. It's going to be brilliant." Anyone watching us at the pub might have thought that we were two friends who actually really quite liked each other. Still mulling this over, I let myself in quietly. The flat was dark from outside, and I wondered if Patrick was having an early night as part of his intensive training. I dropped my bag on the floor in the hall and pushed at the living room door, thinking as I did so that it was nice of him to have left a light on for me. And then I saw him. He was sitting at a table laid with two places, a candle flickering between them. As I closed the door behind me, he stood up. The candle was burnt halfway down to the base. "I'm sorry," he said. I stared at him. "I was an idiot earlier. You're right. This job of yours is only for 6 months, and I have been behaving like a child. I should be proud that you're doing something so worthwhile and taking it all so seriously. I was just a bit thrown, so I'm sorry. Really." He held out a hand. I took it. "It's good that you're trying to help him. It's admirable." "Thank you." I squeezed his hand. When he spoke again, It was after a short breath, as if he had successfully managed some pre-rehearsed speech.
I've made supper. I'm afraid it's salad again.
He reached past me into the fridge and pulled out two plates.
I promise we'll go somewhere for a blowout meal once the Viking is over. Or maybe once I'm onto carb loading. I just...
He blew out his cheeks.
I guess I haven't been able to think about much else lately. I guess that's been part of the problem. And you're right. There's no reason you should follow me about. It's my thing. You have every right to work instead.
Patrick, I said.
I don't want to argue with you, Lou. Forgive me.
His eyes were anxious, and he smelt of cologne. Those two facts descended upon me slowly like a weight.
Sit down anyway, he said. Let's eat and then, I don't know, enjoy ourselves. Talk about something else, not running.
He forced a laugh. I sat down and looked at the table. Then I smiled. This is really nice, I said. Patrick really could do 101 things with turkey breast. We ate the green salad, the pasta salad, and seafood salad, and an exotic fruit salad that he had prepared for pudding. And I drank wine while he stuck to mineral water. It took us a while, but we did begin to relax. There in front of me was a Patrick I hadn't seen for some time. He was funny, attentive. He policed himself rigidly so that he didn't say anything about running or marathons, and laughed whenever he caught the conversation veering in that direction. I felt his feet meet mine under the table and our legs entwine. And slowly, I felt something that had felt tight and uncomfortable begin to ease in my chest. My sister was right. My life had become strange and disconnected from everyone I knew. Will's plight and his secrets had swamped me. I had to make sure that I didn't lose sight of the rest of me. I began to feel guilty about the conversation I had had earlier with my sister. Patrick wouldn't let me get up, not even to help him clear the dishes. At 11:15, he rose and moved the plates and bowls to the kitchenette and began to load the dishwasher. I sat listening to him as he talked to me through the little doorway. I was rubbing at the point where my neck met my shoulder, trying to release some of the knots that seemed to be firmly embedded there. I closed my eyes, trying to relax into it, so that it was a few minutes before I realized the conversation had stopped. I opened my eyes. Patrick was standing in the doorway, holding my holiday folder. He held up several pieces of paper.
What's all this?
It's the trip. The one I told you about. I watched him flick through the paperwork I had shown my sister, taking in the itinerary, the pictures, the Californian beach.
I thought...
His voice, when it emerged, sounded strangely strangled.
I thought you were talking about lords.
What?
Or, I don't know, Stoke Mandeville or somewhere. I thought, When you said you couldn't come because you had to help him, it was actual work, physio or faith healing or something.